As we go on in chapter 18, we read of the destruction of this mystery Babylon, and her filthiness is revealed. In verse 2, we read that Babylon is the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Verse 3, for all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. So the kings or the rulers of the earth would have joined with Mr. Babylon in her filthiness. Then at the end of Revelation 18, in verse 23, as her filthiness is revealed, we read this illuminating phrase, for thy merchants were the great men of the earth, of course referring to the rulers or controllers of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Now the word sorceries here comes from the Greek word pharmakeia, which if translated into English today would be the word drugs. Our word pharmacy comes from this, meaning druggist or drug maker. So the phrase really says of mystery Babylon, by thy drugs were all nations deceived. This simple phrase in Revelation 18 says quite plainly that a great part of mystery Babylon's deception or power over the nations is through the use of drugs. Scientists who have studied the results of marijuana smoking and the use of other drugs admit these things all have one thing in common. Even a little use alters the operation of the mind or the brain. Let me repeat that. Marijuana, LSD, amphetamines, cocaine, heroin, tranquilizers, and scores of other so-called hallucinating drugs cause not just a temporary aberration of the mind called by the users a high, but a permanent change in the individual's thinking. And this would fit the explanation in Revelation 18, verse 23, that the drugs are part of Babylon's control over the kings and over the nations. Now, the exposure of the use of drugs by White House staff personnel came about rather by accident. Some clerk in a drugstore got suspicious of a prescription, checked it out, and found it was an illegal prescription for drugs, and it was made out by James Earl Carter's personal assistant, Dr. Bourne. Dr. Bourne, when confronted, apparently panicked and blurted out that lots of the Carter staff people used drugs. His statement ended up going out on a radio broadcast, and the cat was out of the bag, and by then it was too late to cover it up. Now, some of us have known of this drug use by members of the Carter administration ever since Carter took office, and the public news media people have known about it. They just didn't tell you about it until this inadvertent slip by Dr. Bourne. Liberty Lobby, a conservative organization with offices in Washington, D.C., issued to its members a rather extensive report of the involvement of Carter people in marijuana, cocaine, and even heroin almost a year ago, but they reach only a few thousand people, and the millions who get their news from the wire services, the large daily newspapers, and television simply were never told about it. I believe, of course, like all such evils, they are being revealed and will be revealed to God's people as God begins to pull the mask off the enemies of our people wherever they are. After this seemingly accidental public exposure of drug use in the White House, our newspaper here in Phoenix, the Arizona Republic, ran an editorial on July 26 in which they condemned it, but they also revealed that drug use has been known for a long time by the news media. I will read the article in full, and I will include a copy of it in our new packet of literature for this month, the August packet. I'll give you my address later where you can write for this. And don't turn me off the radio. You listen. I am reading something from our own newspaper. The editorial has a headline, Presidential Potheads, question mark. Quote, "The presidency of Jimmy Carter, conceived in and dedicated to decency, is facing a scandal so ugly and unmanageable that it may foretell his fate in 1980. It seems certain now that the president must answer to the American public about the casual and open use of drugs and marijuana by his inner circle of staff members. The lid on this well-guarded practice was taken off last week by Dr. Peter Born, Carter's drug abuse advisor, who quit after having written an improper prescription. In a statement to the New York Times, Born matter-of-factly said that there was a high incidence use of the hard drug cocaine by senior and junior staffers. But while this may be news to most Americans, it apparently is nothing new to the Washington Press Corps, some of whose members also regularly use drugs or marijuana. And thereby hangs a tale," and I'm reading from the Arizona Republic editorial. Going on, "While quick to pillory other public officials for their philandering or personal lapses, the Washington Press Corps has been reluctant to write about drug use in the White House because some newsmen also use drugs. The chief of the Chicago Sun-Times Bureau in Washington, Patrick Auster, said so flatly yesterday in a nationally distributed commentary. In fact, Auster accused reporters of helping keep the lid on the story. Quote, "The reporters who could write the most authoritative account of White House drug habits are engaged in a cover-up," end of quote from Patrick Auster. The editorial in the Phoenix newspaper goes on. And why? Because, according to Auster, they fear that if they blow the whistle on Carter aides, then White House insiders will blow the whistle on reporters who use drugs. Auster said that the fumes from marijuana routinely waft through planes on presidential trips and at parties on the White House lawn, fumes from joints smoked by Carter aides as well as reporters. Let me repeat that last paragraph about what the man in charge of the Chicago Sun-Times office in Washington, D.C. said. Auster said that the fumes from marijuana routinely waft through planes on presidential trips and at parties on the White House lawn. Fumes from joints, that means marijuana cigarettes, joints smoked by Carter's aides as well as reporters. Now I will add this, and the newspaper didn't say this. If White House staff people are so open in the use of marijuana that they smoke it outside of the White House on the lawn, we must also assume it is smoked in the White House at all times, and this has been covered up from the American people by Carter and the news media. Of course, now on this one thing, the cat is out of the bag, so the news media will report something to the American people, something they have been keeping covered up for years. I've been to Washington, D.C. many times, and this kind of information is readily available to anyone if they go there. But the newspapers cover up for the drunks and the drug users who are running your country. Alcohol is a drug as much as marijuana or cocaine or heroin, the drugs of Babylon. Let me go on in the Arizona Republic editorial. Although drug use has increased in the nation, that can hardly be a rationale for its use by staffers in the world's most powerful office. Worse, persons who make critical decisions affecting the nation's welfare and security cannot afford to be hallucinating. One can only wonder, in light of the Carter presidency's fitful and inconsistent policies, whether some of the administration's zigzagging came out of pot parties. Brother Billy's clownish, loutish behavior can be shrugged off. Andrew Young's pop-off politics can be survived, and Burt Lance's wheeling and dealing can be endured. But the thought that advisors closest to the President of the United States are rolling joints and sniffing coke inside the nation's most revered political institution cannot be tolerated nor ignored. If Carter said he would never lie to the nation, then he now owes the nation the truth, no matter how ugly or painful. End of the editorial in the Arizona Republic. Medical men, scientists, and law enforcement personnel who have had experience with drug users tell us of chronic drug users, and you listen to this. Number one, all job or personal responsibility to other people becomes subservient to their desire to obtain and use the drug. In other words, they will break the law, betray their boss, or rob their grandmother if necessary to continue their use of the drug. The safety of the nation, the well-being of the citizens, the enforcement of the country's laws, even the struggle against foreign enemies, are all of little concern or consequence to a drug user. Number two, they desire to get other people to use drugs. They promote drug use. Now, this is not necessarily a financial thing, although in the case of cocaine and heroin, because they are so expensive, money does enter into it. Those users do deliberately attempt to get others hooked on those drugs so they can sell the drugs to them and make enough money so they can buy their own. But there is also a powerful psychological reason. They want others to use the drug, which then proves to them they are right in using it. In any case, drug users promote drug use. Number three, over a period of time, they lose all moral inhibitions. They lose all moral restraints. They will lie, steal, commit murder, or betray their country with no remorse. They lose all compassion for other people. And number four, they become susceptible to mental control by stronger personalities or by the person who is their source of drugs. The Manson case, of course, was only one of hundreds of cases which have proved that. In a nutshell, drug users become not just immoral, but amoral. They lose all sense of right and wrong, and they can be controlled. And that is what we are talking about when we read Revelation 18 and verse 23 of this secret world-controlling power, by thy drugs were all nations deceived. It is not future, it is happening now. Now, some may accuse me of saying terrible things about the President of the United States. No, I am not. All I am really telling you is that God Almighty revealed in His Word almost 19 centuries ago that the governments of the world, including our own, at the end of this age would be affected or even controlled by drugs. Revelation 17:18 says this wicked system rules over all governments. I say that must include the government of the United States. Revelation 18:23 says the drugs of Babylon deceived the governments of those nations. And I say God has allowed the American people to catch a glimpse of information which proves that God's prophecies are always correct. No, the White House is not the only place using Babylon's mind-controlling drugs. Millions of Americans have been tricked into using the same kind of drugs through so-called legal prescriptions. In fact, many of them use the same drug that Dr. Peter Bourne prescribed for that White House staffer. Remember that drugs are a great part of Mystery Babylon's controlling force over the kings or the rulers of the earth. Drugs will be found in the government. If widespread use of drugs was to be one of the signs of the time of Mystery Babylon the Great at the end of this age, in the time when she was drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, how come ministers still refuse to accept the existence of that Antichrist power today, but still insist it is all yet future? Turn with me now to the Bible. Our primary study here is to identify mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. But to identify her, we needed to identify the red beast upon which she is seen riding in Revelation 17. I've shown that that red beast is comparable to the beast in Revelation 13 and the beast which Daniel saw in Daniel 7 and Daniel 8 and to the great image Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel 2. Those are all slightly different visions of the succession of world empires beginning with ancient Babylon and continuing right on down to the present time. But many say, oh, that was long ago. Those empires are gone. What do you mean that these visions have anything to do with the end time world ruling power, Mystery Babylon in Revelation 17? All of those successive empires have a direct bearing on the secret world government or ruling power which controls even our own government today. Turn with me to Daniel 2. Nebuchadnezzar saw a whole image. The head of gold, Daniel said that was Babylon. Breast of silver, we've identified that as Medo-Persia. Thighs of brass, that would be Greece. Legs of iron, that would be Rome. Then feet of part iron and part clay. And read with me in verse 34 and verse 35 of Daniel 2. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet, that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, and no place was found for them. Notice a very important point often missed by Bible students. The whole image of these kingdoms remained intact until it was struck on the feet, and then they were all destroyed together. The same thing is true of the beast upon which the scarlet woman, Mystery Babylon, rides in Revelation 17. It is representative of the whole series of world empires which remains intact until the end of the age. Now, we think they were each destroyed in turn and now exist no more. But is it possible that although the empires themselves seem to have disappeared, that the secret power which ruled over them continued to rule over each successive empire and still rules the world today? Is that possible? The key is in Daniel 2. Daniel described a whole image, the head of fine gold. That is verse 32, identified as Babylon in verse 38. The breast and arms of silver, identified in verse 39 as the kingdom that would arise after Babylon. We know that was Medo-Persia, for they conquered Babylon while Daniel was still there. The belly and thighs of brass, which was fulfilled in Greece, which conquered Medo-Persia. And the legs of iron, which represent Rome, which then conquered Greece, all of Medo-Persia, and Babylon. Now, history seems to tell us that each of these empires destroyed the previous one. But it is more nearly true that they did not destroy, but instead absorbed the previous one. The term devour is used in Daniel 7:7. In fact, the Daniel 2 image is not several images, but one great whole. And we read in Daniel 7, where each kingdom was a separate beast, in verse 12, as concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. To put it another way, each kingdom really continued inside the succeeding kingdom. This is part of the reason that I say the one beast, for there is only one in Revelation 18, on which the scarlet woman rides, is actually representative of all four kingdoms. It is not just end-time nations as such, but stands for the whole series of world powers. And when I say world powers, don't misunderstand that I am ignoring China and Japan and other areas of the world over which it is obvious that Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome never ruled. Remember, the Bible is about Israel. Certain other great empires, such as those in Asia, existed, but they are ignored in the Bible because they have no bearing on the prophecies to Israel. But that power, which now represents all of these powers, of course, is now reaching for power over all of the planet. And so today, the whole earth is involved, just as the angel told John that Mystery Babylon the Great ruled over all the kings of the earth. But let's not miss our key, which tells us of the continuance of the kingdoms in Daniel 2. The image, the whole image, all four kingdoms, remained intact until we read in verse 34 that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor. I contend that is an end-time prophecy, and that it will happen just at the end of this age as Jesus prepares to return and take rule over his kingdom on the earth. Verse 35 of Daniel 2 goes on. After the whole image was broken, quote, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, and no place was found for them. And the stone, and this is the instrument of the image's destruction, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. The stone, of course, is Christ's kingdom. I've told you many times how the word mountain is used for nation or kingdom. The stone destroys the kingdoms of this world, and then itself becomes a great kingdom over the whole earth. That the stone is Christ's kingdom is made plain by Daniel in verse 44 as he continues to explain the vision of the image to King of Babylon. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it, or the kingdom, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So several things are revealed in Daniel 2 and verse 44. Number one, the kingdom set up by the God of heaven was to be set up while the first four kingdoms still existed. That kingdom, of course, was set up at Mount Sinai and confirmed by Christ 2,000 years ago while Rome ruled the world. Number two, it is that kingdom, Christ's kingdom, set up by the God of heaven, which is the power which will destroy the first four kingdoms. And number three, that kingdom of the God of heaven will then fill the whole earth forever. The obvious conclusion is that these first four kingdoms are not gone, but continue to exist in some form until their final destruction, all at one time, to be immediately followed by the full manifestation of Christ's kingdom. As we read the description of the image, notice the legs are of iron. I said that was Rome. Then we have feet of part iron and part clay, the part which was struck by a stone. Now this is not a fifth kingdom, but the feet are an extension of the fourth kingdom. To put it another way, an extension of all four kingdoms. And this extension will exist right to the end of the age. If we examine each of the other passages we have been studying, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, and Revelation 13, we will find the same thing. In Daniel 7, we had in verse 3, four great beasts come up from the sea. I identified them as Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, the same kingdoms. In verse 17, we read, These great beasts, which are four kings, or kingdoms, for the word means both, which shall arise out of the earth. But in verse 7, we found that the fourth beast, which I said was Rome, had 10 horns. It is also said in verse 7 and verse 19 to have iron teeth, which ties it in with the iron legs of Daniel 2. Then in verse 24, as the angel tells Daniel of the meaning of the vision, he says, the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings which shall arise, and another shall arise after them. So, we see that rising out of the fourth kingdom are 11 other kings or kingdoms. In other words, the horns are a continuance of the kingdoms, just as the feet of iron and clay are a continuance of the kingdoms in Daniel 2. Daniel 7 makes it plain also that this continuance reaches right on to the end of the age. In verse 21 and 22, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. This, of course, would be the time of persecution and tribulation when the horns ruled, the powers which followed that of Rome. Until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. The angel enlarged upon this in verse 23 through 27, repeating that the 10 horns and the 1 horn will speak great words against the Most High. In other words, they will be anti-God, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, so they will be at war with the Christians. And the last of verse 25 says, and they, meaning the saints, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. So the Christians will be in captivity under this last vestige of the four beast kingdoms. Verse 26, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion, to consume and to destroy it unto the end. Here in Daniel 7, as in Daniel 2, we see the whole beast power continues to exist and even is in control of the saints of God right up until God gives the saints power to destroy the beast empire. No room in these prophecies for any real end of these consecutive beast empires. Nor is there any room for a removal of the Christians off from the earth. The beast empires begin with Babylon, continue right on through Rome, and right on to the end of this age, all the time opposing, ruling over, and killing the followers of the Most High God. Then the whole system will be destroyed at once. And we read in verse 27 of Daniel 7, and the kingdom, and the dominion, and the greatness of the kingdom, meaning God's kingdom, of the kingdom under the whole heaven, shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. That is identical to the story in Daniel 2. The whole image of the four beast empires, and its end of the age extension, persecutes and rules over God's people right down to the end of the age. And then God's kingdom, Christ's kingdom, of which his people are the true subjects, will rise up and destroy the entire beast power, and Christ's kingdom will then take rule over all the earth. That is what John saw in vision in Revelation 11. When the third woe came and the seventh angel sounded, and the voices in heaven said, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And that is what we will see in Revelation 18 and Revelation 19. As the power of mystery, Babylon the Great, is broken, the kingdom of Jesus Christ takes rule over all the earth. And we even have verse 6 of Revelation 18, which tells us, it is the saints of God who will destroy mystery Babylon. No deserting or absent without leave, AWOL Christian saints off up in heaven sitting out the battle. No, the Christians are God's soldiers. We are His battle axe and His weapons of war. We are Christ's army, which will destroy the power of the Antichrist over all the earth. And we'll do it here in a battle on the earth, not sitting off up in heaven. In Daniel 8, we also have four kingdoms or empires. Daniel was in Babylon, the first kingdom. The realm of verse 3 through verse 7 is named in verse 20 as Medo-Persia. The he-goat of verse 5 through 8 is identified in verse 21 as Greece. And out of that he-goat came up a horn which waxed great. This would be Rome. So Daniel 8 has four kingdoms, the same number as the others. In Revelation 13, we have one beast with seven heads and ten horns. His parts parallel the first three beasts of Daniel 7. In Revelation 13, one of the heads is wounded unto death, but the deadly wound is healed. Then an evil anti-God entity is described, which could only be the Antichrist power, which would come up out of the first empires and would really be a continuance of them, just as we have seen in the other visions. This is the one of whom it is said in verse 16 through 18 of Revelation 13, "And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666. Now, there are all sorts of teachings today that 666 stands for a future Antichrist world dictator. But here in Revelation 13, as in Daniel 2, and Daniel 7, and Daniel 8, the power being described and being prophesied about, and whose identifying number is here given, is not some separate world ruler who has no connection with the former empires. There is no time space between the first three and the fourth one. There is no space between the fourth one and that which comes up out of the fourth. The symbols are all part of one image. They all make war against God's people all through the ages, not just for some fictitious 7 years which has yet to come. The number 66 is used in many places today, most of which have to do with those who hate Jesus and Christians. The Red Bolsheviks used the number as long ago as 1934 in Russia on postage stamps. 666 is the number of man or of man's rule in opposition to the rule of Jesus Christ. We could use the term Antichrist, which, by the way, means both in opposition to Christ and in replacement of Christ. I won't cover the number 666 in this series, except to say it is already in use on a worldwide basis. As an example, textiles being exported from Red China have the number 666 imprinted upon them. The number 666 is used by the Jews in Palestine as the first three numbers of all license plates issued in Jerusalem. It is also the prefix of the phone numbers of the Israeli government offices. In the United States, the U.S. Treasury Department uses it on publications which carry a U.S. Treasury agent's badge on the front. The number on the badge is 666. If you want a copy of that, write to your congressman or to the Treasury Department and ask them for a copy of the publication on illegal weapons. The number 666 is on the cover. And it is still true today, as was taught by the great men of the Protestant Reformation in Europe, that the title of the Roman Pope in Latin, with each letter's numerical equivalent added, totals 666. So the number 666 is not future. It has been with us for centuries. And it is openly used by Antichrist people and organizations in the world today. I think they know exactly what it means. They also know most of the people of the world know nothing about any such number, which was to be an identifying mark of things which were Antichrist. By the way, once you read my booklet, Billions for the Bankers, you will understand why the U.S. Treasury Department uses the number 666. Anyway, the people seen in verse 2 of Revelation 15 are those who had gotten the victory over the beast, his image, his mark, and the number of his name. And verse 3, they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb. Two songs are referred to here, the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb, and the substance of the two songs is then given in the rest of verse 3 and in verse 4, saying, Great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty, just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou only art holy, for all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are made manifest. In those verses is the promise that all the people of the earth will ultimately worship the God of the Bible. However, prior to all coming to worship God Almighty, only the saints who have overcome the beast, his image, his mark, and the number of his name are shown here as singing praises to God. In other words, worshiping God. And they worship him by singing two songs. The song of the Lamb is quite obviously what we call the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is the preaching and the believing in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ for the redemption of Israel and the salvation of the world. But what is the song of Moses? We don't hear much preaching about Moses in the churches today, and yet John saw these overcomers singing what he called the Song of Moses. Well, there really is a Song of Moses in the Holy Bible. And some time ago I did a series of 8 sermons on that Song of Moses. I have a weekly tape ministry where a church sermon and this radio broadcast is duplicated each week and mailed out to a list of subscribers. They are sent out as loan tapes. They listen to them and return them. Or if the sermon is especially interesting, they can send an offering and keep the tape for that week. During the time I was preaching on the Song of Moses, practically every family on our tape ministry purchased and kept every one of those tapes. Many wrote to say they had never heard there was such a thing as a Song of Moses in the Bible, and they were amazed and thrilled at the way the study of that song opened up their understanding to the Bible, especially to end-time fulfilled prophecy. Some wrote to say they had listened to the whole series 2, 3, and 4 times. One man wrote to tell me he had listened to all 8 sermons 12 times. Now, I am saying all of that because I simply will not have time to go over that Song of Moses again on these radio broadcasts. They would help exceedingly in understanding Mystery Babylon and the last chapters of the book of Revelation. So, if you do want to hear the sermons on the Song of Moses that Revelation 15 says the overcomers will be singing, you can have those 8 sermons on 4 C90 cassette tapes for an offering to this radio ministry of $10 or more. Write to me at America's Promise, Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona 85010. Ask for the cassette tapes or the series of tapes on the Song of Moses, Enclose a $10 offering and they will be sent to you by return mail. Now remember, you have to give a few weeks for them to arrive. They go out fourth class mail from here. Let's go on in John's vision in Revelation 15, continuing on from verse 5. And after that I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. And the seven angels came out of the temple, having the seven plagues, clothed in pure and white linen, and having their breasts girded with golden girdles. And one of the four beasts gave unto the seven angels seven golden vials, full of the wrath of God, who liveth forever and ever. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God, and from his power. And then listen to this. And no man was able to enter into the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were fulfilled. Now the next chapter then goes on to describe the pouring out upon the earth of these seven vials of God's wrath, and we'll read them and discuss them briefly. However, first I want to point out to my listeners a very important truth revealed in the last verses of chapter 15. John saw a vision of the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven. And he said, the temple was filled with the smoke from the glory of God and from his power, but no man was able to enter into the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were fulfilled. And in that phrase alone is proof that much of what is taught about heaven today is actually falsehood. Almost every denominational church in America and the Catholic churches teach that Christians go to heaven to be with Christ immediately upon their death. And many Protestant denominations and most so-called non-denominational churches further teach that the rest of us will go to heaven to be with Christ in the near future in a so-called rapture of the church. They further teach that all of these vials of God's wrath are going to be poured out upon the earth in the seven-year great tribulation after we Christians are all in heaven. But John wrote here rather plainly that no man could enter the temple of the tabernacle in heaven until the seven plagues were fulfilled or completed. Where does that leave you folks with your hope of the rapture? Well, it leaves you without Bible foundation, at least in Revelation 15 and verse 8. Now, I do not deny but that the believers will be in the temple of God sometime. For Jesus Christ himself said in Revelation 3:12, him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And it was the overcomers which John was writing about in chapter 15, and he said, no man could enter the temple of God until the seven plagues were finished. Let's go on in chapter 16 and read about the seven plagues as far as we have time today, and I'll have to be rather brief on them, for I do want to spend most of my radio time in this series on Mystery Babylon herself, in Revelation 17 and Revelation 18. Revelation 16, the angels now have seven vials of God's wrath. Verse 1 and 2, and I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image.